celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis. Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have Jake Thistle. He is a musician, a singer-songwriter, and he's based in New Jersey, USA, with two albums and a live record. Jake opts to spend any time not in the classroom, out on the road or plane, flying to perform and record in places like LA, Europe, Nashville, and honestly, wherever the opportunity calls. His talent is one thing, but Jake's work ethic is what has truly allowed him these opportunities, such as being on the bills with the likes of Jackson Brown, Stevie Nicks, Foo Fighters, Eddie Vedder, Steve Earle, like the Lumineers, many Hall of Famers. That list is so truncated right now. And along the way, Jake has picked the musical brains of rock royalty, such as Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Steve Winwood, and many other influential artists. Moreover, Jake has personally raised hundreds of thousands for a variety of charitable organizations through an extensive range of fundraising performances, and he's just contributed music to events that have raised so much financially, but just like emotionally, which is amazing. And in recognition of these efforts, Jake was recently named an official artist for Why Hunger's Artists Against Hunger and Poverty, alongside legends like Bruce Springsteen. It is no wonder that he has already been featured on media platforms like the BBC Radio, Billboard, Variety, and CBS News. Even at his young age, there is already so much to his name. While Jake is a performing artist, he's just a great person. I've had the pleasure of meeting him and chatting to him live. So today he's going to be a guest on Tall Poppy Talk. Jake, my first question is, where and how are you today?
Well, I'm great. I'm here at Rutgers, and so that's always a lot of fun. And I'm super grateful to be talking to you. It means the world to you, so this is going to be a lot of fun. And thank you for the intro. I feel like I can leave now. Like, that was great. It means a lot. Like, how do I, you know?
No, thank you. It's always like a bit of a, a bit mean of me to do this like big intro and then be like, okay, so we're gonna get into it. Like, I think your human instinct is to be like, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. You make me sound cooler than I am, so that means a lot.
As I mentioned very briefly, we had met, and so we want to shout out Professor Mark Beale. He's gonna be listening to this, so straight out the gate, thank you for introducing us.
Absolutely. As soon as we hang up from this, I'm going to do my pitch email assignment.
Yeah.
So if he's listening, just know I will get it in on time.
And that's something we're going to talk about soon is like, I call it balancing, not juggling, because I personally have like a grievance with the word juggling. It makes it sound like you're going to drop something. So we'll get to that. But what I really wanted to start with and just to ground the listeners is clearly you're a singer-songwriter, you're just a musician if we use one like noun. But I want to know, when did music first impact your life? And then how, like a second part is like, how long have you been really taking it like seriously?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of attribute it all to when I was 3 years old, my parents let me stay up to watch half of the Super Bowl, and they thought, you know, maybe I'd get into sports or something, which was not the case. But Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers played the halftime show, and for whatever reason, it just mesmerized me. It's like sort of that moment I like became like a person. I like became conscious. I was like, oh crap, like that's really cool. So ever since then, I sort of hit the ground running, and I would go on YouTube and I'd look up songs of them, and it would recommend me other people. So that's really how I started to develop my music taste. And so it was all around like a really young age. And then when I was 9, I picked up guitar for the first time. And so I guess it did take me a little less than 6 years to sort of decide it's what I wanted to do. But I picked up guitar when I was 9, and then roughly 6 months later, I did my first gig, and it's just snowballed since then. So it's, I've been doing it now longer than I haven't, which is fun, you know.
And okay, also like 6 months after you start playing the guitar, you're performing it. I just want to call out there, that's a pretty quick learning curve. When you were like, when you first performed, was it good? Like, is that a fair question?
I think it was good enough for a 9-year-old that had been playing for 6 months. I think if I showed up to my next gig and played like that, I wouldn't get a call back. But, you know, I had the cuteness factor working for me back then that has seemed to have, I've aged out of, you know. So now I actually have to at least pretend like I know how to play. But it was a lot of fun. It was a open mic night and a friend. So how I started guitar was, there was a family friend who played. He was a little older than me. I think he's probably around 27, 28 now. So at the time, you know, 15, 16. And he gave me a guitar when I was three, just because it made noise, right? I was like a toddler, like that's the coolest thing in the world. And then I kind of grew out of the phase of just wanting to make noise, so I forgot about it. It collected dust. I never learned how to play it. And so as he started to get older, he started doing it professionally, he started to get really good. And so his parents and his family said, you know, maybe we should have his first guitar. Like that might be a cool thing to have if he does this for a living, that could be sentimental. So they asked for it back, and I, at this point, I'm nine. I don't care at all. I'm just, hey, take it back. I haven't seen it in years. It's in the basement. But they felt so bad, they replaced it with another guitar, you know, so it was like sort of like the Indiana Jones swap. But it just seemed like too nice a guitar to have and not know how to play. And just making noise didn't cut it anymore because I was 9 years old. It was like now I felt like I should actually learn. So that's how I started. And that family sort of knew of an open mic. And so I went and I did three songs to open it up. It was a ton of fun.
And what I love to hear there too is like immediately having those enablers in a good way, like those support people who are just like, yeah, there's an open mic, like go. And when you're nine, you also, in addition to cuteness factor, you have this like ignorance or, you know, right, childhood bliss where you don't really know that you should be nervous potentially about an open mic, right? You're like, oh, cool, I get to go do this in front of people and show off. That's so fun. Yeah. And I'm wondering for you, do you think that that age really protected you and helped you so that now, like getting up in front of people, you don't experience, well, potentially you experience like performance nerves, but you don't have like stage fright because you did it before you were probably aware that you should be nervous.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all the time, you know, it also helped the sort of role models I grew up with, and they were all pretty traditional musicians. You know, Tom Petty being one of them, because I mentioned it before, but like a lot of those classic rock guys, at the time, 30 years, now 40, 50 years of a career where they wrote songs and they put out a record and then they toured for a year and a half and then they did it again and again and again. So when I started and I started watching them, I had a lot of people, you know, sort of like, you know, hands on their knees and kneel down like, oh, are you nervous for this or that? But it never really struck me because it's just Tom Petty learned how to play and then he did gigs for 40, 50 years. Like that's just like what my 9-year-old brain was thinking. It's just what you do, right? So I played and then I saw that opportunity. It's like, well, okay, I'll play like all the musicians I like, whatever. So I think that definitely helped me, was that sort of naivety that was what was just done, you know?
Well, and to that point there, like as you're talking, I'm thinking maybe that is the quote unquote correct way to do it. And part of this conversations I love to have on the podcast is like, that should be the normal route as opposed to what our societal kind of expectations or pressures is like, oh, you should be really nervous to put yourself out there. What it sounds like just naturally happens to you, which is great, is like, of course I'll put myself out there because that's what I've seen role modeled in people who I admire. So I'm going to do that. And that's all part of what I want to do about recreating this conversation around chasing your dreams and being ambitious is like, no, don't be nervous at all. Like go for it 110% because that's how you're going to actually learn and make gains, which it sounds like happened to you because as soon as you get on a stage in front of people, you learn things or you practice more because you don't want to, you know, mess up a note or a chord in front of people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I it was that sort of thing. I get asked a lot too from other songwriters and from people. It was like, what was that sort of inflection point where you decided you needed to write songs? Like, was it this or that? And I don't really have an answer for it because it's the same thing as gigging. It's just all these songwriters wrote the songs that they played. You know, they didn't as much play other people's songs. So after a couple open mic nights of these covers, I said, all right, well, now I have to be like them and write. So it just seemed like a natural progression. But I think that was a lot better for my development than sort of sitting down in a room and like getting told, you know, you've been playing for this long, so if you want to do this, you have to write songs or something like that. I learned all of those things for sure, but it was a lot more through either trial and error or it's just what was done, so you may as well figure it out, you know. So it was all internal stuff.
That's great. Into a question about internal, which you fed right into my second question, is obviously you absorb and you listen to so many musicians most people do, but you've got this different ear to it. When we talk about sound, it's like, oh, that's Jake's sound, or, you know, that's the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers sound. Do you feel like you've landed in this place of, oh, yep, this is my sound? And how has it changed and how do you think it's going to change?
Yes, I have this meeting about three times a week with my record label because we're starting to put together a new batch of songs. You know, I don't think I've fully landed on a sound yet. I kind of hope I never do, because then I can keep figuring it out. I don't want to become one of those, you know, just cookie cutter, you know, this is the Jake Thistle record. You put the songs in like that and ship it out.
Yep.
But it's all about, really, for me, it's finding the balance between, you know, I listen to a lot of music, and I've got a lot of idols that I hold, you know, really close, and I respect all these people so much, and all I do is really consume that type of music. So sort of balancing a lot of those different sounds, because a lot of it is that classic rock influence, but I listen to a ton of more contemporary music, and it's sort of about finding as much, like, as marketable as that can be, just for myself, not necessarily for, you know, other people. You know, hopefully other people listen as well, but, you know, I just try to make the music that I would want to listen to. And so sometimes I think when I listen back, I can really hear the phases I was in at the time, because it's like, if I wanted to listen to this type of song then, that's why the album sounds like that. So I think the sound is becoming a lot more refined, not refined, but consistent as I get older, and I discover a little bit more of what I want to do, and I'm working with similar people, but I'm still vaguely searching for it. So hopefully I'm always searching for it.
Definitely. And to your, like, to your age, to your whole life ahead of you, like, yeah, it's actually extremely early. You're the oldest you've ever been, but in 10 years, 20, 30, you'll be like, I was such a baby then, like, yeah. Which is fun to think about. And I had a previous guest who spoke about, it was an opinion, they were referring to, like, their own opinions, and yours is your own voice. You can either be a wind flag, like one of those ones that you see at the beach telling you which way the wind's going, mm-hmm. or a signpost. And it sounds like you're not a signpost, because you're not static, but I'm using that metaphor of, you can either be like, oh, what's trending, and I'm going to move with that and try to chase it, but that's going to be fleeting and not rewarding to you as the artist. Whereas if you're the signpost who's like, oh, this is where I am, and I'm still figuring out what's on the sign, but people will come to you because they resonate with what you're doing, as opposed to if you're this wind flag, you're just going to get people who are following the trends, and that's okay. But it sounds like you're looking more for that long-term legacy sort of musician vibe.
For sure. I mean, I really love it. I love doing what I'm doing. So any way that would sort of take me out of that is sort of trying to write the songs that I wouldn't gravitate toward or something like that, because it's what's current. In addition to maybe cringing at myself 10 years down the road, I just think if I want the longevity, to me, is not, the music I write is not particularly going to be selling out MetLife anytime soon, but it's something that is what I really want to do. So instead of searching for that, and that's such a dice roll anyway, you know, to say the least, you know, just staying true to what I would want to listen to, and just hope that surrounds other people. And I mean, that all ties back to the influences too. Like, I'm sitting here in New Jersey, so the police will come arrest me if I don't bring up Bruce Springsteen. But like, to see a career that's coming around to 50, 55 years, and he survived disco and hair metal and grunge and hip hop and all of these incredible, you know, behemoths of the industry that sort of rose and fell and found their place other ways. It's not that they're not around, but he stayed so true to his musicianship the entire time. And so I think the longevity in that is something that'll be studied for, you know, a really long time.
I found it, so my background is more in sports, and there are certain athletes, like really talented athletes, that I've had the pleasure of either sharing a boat with or just being in the presence of, as you've either potentially shared a lineup or just met these people who are so obsessed with the craft that they don't care that you're new to it. In fact, they're like, what can I learn from you? So with some athletes, it's like, they might be Olympic medalists, but they're like, oh, what can you teach me? There's this relentless curiosity. And I'm sure you've experienced it with certain musicians, where you really get motivated and inspired by, like, there are these people who are certifiably legacies, like legends at what they do, and they're still not satisfied. They're still curious, and they're asking questions to people who are younger and newer in the game, because that's the sort of person I strive to be, and it sounds like you do, where it's, no, I'm always going to be trying to learn from others, regardless of how quote unquote successful I get, because that's what I've seen from these role models that I admire.
And, you know, I never took really any formal in-person lessons. I kind of started on YouTube. So when I started getting together and working with musicians and playing with them on stage or in other capacities, that was really where the development happened. So I really value the time that I can spend on stage. That's where I've learned the most, is just working with all these people who are, I mean, whether we're playing a little corner of a bar or I'm lucky enough to be on like a festival bill, right? Like with all these people, like it's just, that's my favorite way to absorb things. And it's just, I feel like I've gotten so much out of it. And especially as a songwriter, my favorite songs are the ones that just really piss me off, because it's like, how did he write that? Like, that's so unfair. I was just thinking about that today. I listened to, I'm not a huge fan, but I am now. Sam Fender released a new single, and it's like, it should be illegal to write a song that good. It's like, it's horrible. So it really makes me strive and be like, all right, now I really got to pull myself together and try to develop. You know?
That's so clever and like cool to hear, because I'm a big Swiftie, and I remember seeing this video where she's walking, like Taylor Swift is walking past Post Malone, and she turns and she's like, that hook. Because he'd written a line, to your point, she's like, I wish I'd written it. And that's just cool to see two singer-songwriters, and that thing you just described of, wish I had written that.
It's such an angry profession. It's so full of love, but it's also so angry.
Yeah, and I wonder too, like, you have your band and people you work with, but in terms of ever doing like collaborations, have you had the opportunity to do that yet? And what do you think about that?
I've really only just scratched the surface. I went down to Nashville in August. Primarily, I went down to work with a guy named Butch Walker, who I was so grateful he had me. We did a song together. We're going to do another one or two for this record, but he just has such an incredible resume, and he's so talented. He did some stuff with Taylor and I think a little bit with Ed Sheeran, and he did a lot of Green Day and Panic at the Disco and Pink, and like, it's just like all these incredible names, and then like somewhere way down below it says me. So I'm so grateful he chose to work with me, and it's an amazing studio down there. But I got to collaborate with him, which was a ton of fun, and while I was there I got to write with some other friends that are in the area who are incredibly talented, and that was really the first time I'd ever co-written with anybody. I've worked with some producers, but it's more I come in with the song and the label is, you know, book the studio time, and then it's nice to meet you, now let's start working on it. So it was incredible to sort of just sit down face to face, and like less of a time crunch and less of a goal even, and just say, all right, let's see what kind of comes out of this. So I loved it. I've exclusively only released songs I've written on my own so far. So, you know, maybe we'll start seeing more of those coming out that were co-writes, and it's excellent to bring another voice. And I think it especially after sort of like 2.5 records of literally just me playing most of the instruments, it's like we really needed to get some fresh takes in here. So I'm really excited about it.
And I think too, what's really exciting to hear in that is like, as a absorber again of music, someone who listens a lot, whenever there are collabs, it introduces me to a new artist, because I might have started listening with artist A and then they do this collab, so then I'm like, okay, I better check out artist B, and then suddenly I'm listening to them too. And the fun, beautiful thing with music is it moves you so much, and it can make you really happy or sad or motivated. I have playlists for absolutely everything. So that's the fun thing about your music and how you continue to grow. Your music from album one, even once you've got 12, 13, whatever albums in the future, there's still going to be a need and an appreciation for those songs on album one, because to your point before, that's where you were when that was recorded and that went out. So it's going to be fun for you to go back and listen. Life has changed, but it really brings you back, which is the power of music.
Jackson Browne is a great songwriter. He always says, like, he likes to refer to his albums as records, not because of vinyl or whatever, but because they're literally a record of what he was doing, thinking, and where he was at the time. So that's kind of stuck with me too, is because it is such a incredible, you know, sort of snapshot of whatever 2-month period that was getting recorded.
Yeah, and because you've shared something with me, some wisdom, I'll share one back. And you made me think of this when, what was the name of the person you worked with in Nashville?
Butch Walker.
Butch Walker. And you said there, and we'll get into this with the whole Tall Poppy element of, he's worked with all these people and somewhere down the list is your name, right? Something that a coach said to me once, which so resonated, was champions act like champions long before they become champions. You don't suddenly win an Olympic medal or win a Grammy and it's like, oh, now I'm a Grammy worthy. No, you were always had those qualities and those values. You're just not there yet. And it sounds like from the way you just conduct yourself and also how you sound, because I've listened to all your stuff live and on Spotify, you're acting like that champion before you become the champion. So it's really special for me to get you in this point in your life right now where you're still studying, figuring out your sound. And I look forward 10 years time being like, yo, I had him interviewed in 2024. Like, check that out. So I just wanted to say that to you, is it's very cool. And as a third party person, I can so identify that in just speaking with you.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind.
Of course. Now, to switch gears slightly, as I mentioned, you are, you know, studying full time and balancing everything. So why was it important to you to actually pursue your study as well? Because it could have been very tempting to just go fully into the music pursuit. Why did you feel like it was important to make sure you got your study as well?
Well, first of all, I thought it'd be fun. I've always loved school. I was not one of those sort of musicians who has all these horror stories about getting in trouble with the man and kicking down desks and stuff. I loved it. I loved high school. I loved middle school, everything, elementary school. So it just seemed like the logical next step. I was ready to keep attending school. Also, being a musician and a songwriter is still 100% plan A, but I also love to eat and have a roof. So I figured getting a degree in something other than music would help me, because it is it's a tight field, and it's even with all going well, that still needs to be kept up for a long time. You know, there are plenty of people who have had sort of like success of people's dreams that are now journalists or something like that. So that was kind of my thought process in that too. I also, through my circle of musicians, there's a ton of people that are, you know, a good bit older than me in there that have had really interesting careers. And so a lot of them stemmed from doing music while also working as a writer or a journalist or something like that. So it just seemed like a logical next step, in addition to really liking, you know, what I was going to do. As long as I wasn't doing math, I was happy.
Obviously, as a singer-songwriter, you need to have things to songwrite about. So having like another, whether it is inspired by things you actually talk about in class or just having other life experiences to write about, do you find that's a little bit of a stereotype? You have to have quote unquote lived through some hard stuff to be able to write about it. Could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'm ashamed to say I've had a fantastic life, a good upbringing. I think writing comes from a couple different places. I've talked about this with some other writers. But, you know, a lot of people write because they need to express themselves, and they really need, like, that is their way of getting out their emotions. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But the other side of it is like, I'm really lucky that I have had good experiences, and I don't feel particularly tortured. But I love writing. I love words and stories. And so I just try to write what I would like to hear. Of course, from an emotional standpoint, but also just from a character standpoint or a syntax standpoint or whatever. A lot of it, I keep, you know, going back to the influences, but listening to some of the best writers of music, you know, at least rock and roll, but probably of all time, it's so word-based and it's so character-based. And so I'm still really trying to work toward that. But a lot of it comes from just writing things that I think are interesting, whether they necessarily relate to my specific story or not.
Thank you. It's good to hear that too, because I'd listened to an interview. Again, I keep bringing up Taylor Swift, but Taylor Swift, Folklore, one of her albums, she was like, I just kind of imagined that I was someone who lived in a cabin. Like, she completely made up a story. We all do when you have powerful imaginations, and then writing from that perspective. And I think that that's also a really cool way to expand the reach of your songs beyond someone who relates just to Jake Thistle. No, they relate to your music, and they might not technically relate to you at all, but the words you're getting across, that's the beauty of songs too, is like people can take from them what they want in the meaning, and a word that you might have intended to bring happiness might bring sadness, and it's all up to the interpretation of the person listening to it and where they listen to it and all those other factors. So I just think that that's a fun thing with anything that people create. You make it for one thing and people take something completely different from it. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm happy for you. I didn't think about it like that. And there's no question to that. I just think that that's a cool part of songwriting.
I've been listening, especially this year, like everybody here in class has been, when is Spotify Wrapped going to come out? Like, what year is going to be? Like, all this stuff. So I've just been reflecting on it. But this year I listened to a lot of a band called Wilco, and Jeff Tweedy, he writes so ambiguous and so out there. And so it's incredible to see these people's interpretations of his lyrics, because they're incredibly different from maybe what I thought or other people in the comments section or whatever, because he just has a really interesting way of saying things. And I am an American aquarium drinker who assassinates down the avenue. That's pretty different than any other song that's just like, I feel sad because of this, you know, or whatever. So I think it's a really powerful tool, even if you're saying nonsense, because I guarantee it doesn't mean anything to him. Maybe not that one, but in general, it's like those old memes where the English teacher's saying the door is red because of this, this, and that, and Shakespeare's saying that, no, just the door was red. So it's incredible to find meaning in stuff, because it exists whether it's intended or not.
Yes, and as communication majors, both of us, it's like how you send a message and how it is received, that was a channel. There's so many points where it can get distorted or altered, and what you intended is completely different from what comes out the other end. But that is also the beauty of communication too. And so if you're smart, you'll think about, okay, how's this going to come at the other end? But also, yeah, the door's red because we needed a door and the one was red. Like, sometimes it is that simple. Okay, getting to like the crux question, and I'll give you some more background on why I even do the podcast in the first place, is something I have admired in a lot of people, which is why I harped on about it at the beginning with you, is like people who without hesitation chase their dreams and they celebrate it and they're proud of it. That's really inspiring because it encourages you to do the same thing. And I noticed it, especially when I'd come to America, was a bit of a contrast to what I had grown up with. Now, I had a lot of hype people in New Zealand, and I still do. I don't want to diminish that, but there is something very American about proudly like stating your opinion and going for it. And all that to say, this whole idea of tall poppy syndrome, it's an experience felt or phenomenon in Australia and New Zealand, where as the poppy rises in the poppy field, we chop it down, bring it back to where everyone else is at. We want you to succeed, but at one point, like, stop being too successful, like, stay within your range. And I used to think that that was super unique to the New Zealand experience. And I have come to learn through these many podcast interviews is like, no, most people experience some sense of either external or internally chopping yourself down. Do I want to go for it? What if I look stupid? Or what if people say this? And so rather than me just being like, oh, well, Jake's clearly confident and I'm not going to assume otherwise, I like to ask you, like, hey, like, what is your experience with imposter syndrome or potentially external chopping down? Have you experienced imposter syndrome? What's your relationship to it? And could you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it, because I listened to so much classic music growing up, and I've certainly expanded my horizons now, but I sort of came up with a lot of musicians who were already either established or just generally older than me by 20 years. I was in a band. I would sit in with the band every Sunday for about 6 years. It was Lou Palo, who I learned a ton from. He was Les Paul's ring guitarist. But I was the youngest person in the band by 70 years. I was 16 and he was 86.
Wow.
And he was one of the other younger people in the band. I think he was the second youngest in the band, if you can believe it. So all of this is to say, I don't know if I sort of developed musically as somebody traditionally would, because I didn't, it's changed now, but I didn't really play with too many people who were peers in terms of age range. So I, you know, getting to share bills with people where I am the youngest by 30 years, 40 years, certainly kind of yielded, I think, interesting consequences is the wrong word, but sort of feelings and securities or insecurities, because it wasn't like we all were figuring it out together. I was on a lot of these bills where they had at least either figured it out or given up trying. So it was sort of an interesting dynamic to do that. So I think a lot of it came from that, because I would share these bills with people who were a lot older than me. And I don't, you know, when I'm playing with people my age who we're all sort of coming up together, I don't feel like that as much, if that makes sense.
Totally, because to your experience, you're looking at them thinking, oh, they've got their sound, they've got their whatever, they've got their pre-performance ritual, like they've got it together. And I actually think it would be interesting if you were to talk to them now, like how we are. And I'm sure they would be like, oh man, here's this young guy. He's so fresh. He's got this. Like, who am I? Like, they would potentially have insecurities the other way. And I'm just projecting there. But part of that is we often underappreciate that other people have their own insecurities and just think that they've all got it together. And it's like, no, we all care, which is why we all have these insecurities, because we want to do well. And
yeah,
I honestly think it comes down to you care at the end of the day a lot about it. But it's really cool that you were sharing these bills with people who had done it for so long that with age, like I'm only a handful of years older than you, but I already have had more experience of caring less about other people than when I was your age. So not saying that you care less or whatever than me, but like when I think back to when I was your age, it's like, oh, I almost wish I could tell her now, like, hey, care less about that and care more about this. And so for you to be able to share the stage with people who had 30, 40, 50, 70 years worth of that would have definitely rubbed off, because the people you surround yourself with, they're going to influence you ultimately. It's unavoidable. So it's really cool that you were able to be in those rooms every Sunday, absorb their wisdom.
They started playing together in 1956. So it was certainly when I arrived and started sitting in with them, it was definitely a learning curve to get there. But yeah, you know, and I think a lot of it came because I was playing so young, and I tried to stay conscious of the reactions and seeing what worked in the shows and what didn't. But a lot of it came from like, all right, well, I had a really good response on that bill, but was it because I'm good, or is it because everybody likes to give a standing ovation to a 12-year-old? You know, it was like one of those things. So that's something I've really gotten grateful for as I get older, is now like I don't get the 12-year-old sympathy claps anymore. Like if the audience doesn't like it, they will tell me. So I don't have to worry about that, thankfully, anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, it's cool that you're conscious too of that shift, as you have to be. And I had one artist, Cyril Riley, he's like producer, DJ, the way he spoke about interacting with negative comments, because he leverages a lot like TikTok, social media, and does remixes. And he says like he is able to cast, for lack of a better word, filter over these comments. And he's like, I don't care if they're negative. What are they saying? Because they tend to have a point. Like if I was just getting all positive, then I'm not able to grow from that. But if I have five comments that say, oh, I wish that the drop had been here versus here, I'm going to listen to that, because that's where you grow. So he's thankful for that critique, even if it does come across a little bit nasty sometimes on social media, because people are giving you your feedback and then you as the artist are able to respond to that.
And, you know, I never liked the whole argument of like, oh, well, what do you know, whatever, because it's like, even if they don't know music, like I hate to break it to you, but like they're still the ones that are going to be buying and listening to the music, right? So like they have a point, even if they're not, you know, in the industry or whatever. So, you know, take that in and take it with a grain of salt and still try to, you know, learn from it the best I can.
As even a very young age, you just enjoy music for the sound or the way it makes you feel, and you don't necessarily know what it's saying. And it rounds back to what you said before about like sometimes lyrics are just lyrics and people will enjoy them, whereas other times someone's going to like tattoo it on their arm because it means so much to them. Like that's just a really cool thing to point out. And it made me think of your listeners are going to be all over the place as you grow. It'll just expand and expand. And I just think that's cool. So no question, just a comment. Next one. How do you define high performance?
You know, I suppose it's just, you know, especially in music, there's a lot of ways something can go wrong, especially on a show, because you know it. Sometimes you're walking into a venue and it's the back line is not great, or you know it's not your own sound guy or whatever. So I think it's just like if you can walk off the stage and sort of be able to legitimately say that you did the best with the circumstances you were surrounded with, I think that's good. And I don't say that from experience, because I've always worked with I'm super grateful. I've mostly gotten really great front of house people and lighting people, and even when I don't bring my own, they typically know what they're doing. So I'm not saying that from some sort of grudge, but I will say I don't think it's the literal product. I think it's the sort of the product relative to what how well you thought it was going to go.
I enjoy that. Thank you. And every answer is different, which is why I like to ask that one about high performance, and it's probably going to change as you have more experiences and you'll meet someone and you're like, wow, that's a high performer because of this particular thing they do. And then suddenly that will be incorporated into your definition. Like, I really have enjoyed working with people who, whether that has been like in athletics or on the podcast, is people who turn up and, to your point, like, regardless of whatever else is happening, are able to give it their best. And that's so relative, but they can give it their best and be super dedicated and like present with you. And then when it's done, I've had some people be like, okay, awesome, gotta go. But I had no idea that they were in a rush, because when they're doing the thing they're doing, they're so invested in it. And I can learn a lot about that with high performance, is like, do the thing you're doing, be fully present, and then when that's done, move on to the next thing. Whereas sometimes, at least in my mind, I'm trying to do the things tomorrow, today, and it's just compromising what I'm doing in the moment. So all that to say, I love your definition. It's probably going to change and evolve as mine does, but that's what's cool about this whole conversation around high performance, is it's not a static thing. It's extremely right. dynamic. And as you get new external experiences or factors into your life, it's going to change mm-hmm. because your standard's going to change as well.
Yes. And if I can make, I don't know if I ever have, but another songwriter angry, I also consider that high performance. If they're mad, they didn't write it. So I'm still working on that one. You know?
Yeah. You'll wait with glee like that day. Someone's like, damn it, Jake, I wish I'd written that. You're going to be like, yes, put that in the journal. I love that. That's a fun, what's the word for that? Milestone, let's say. I look forward to that day for you.
Thank you. Yeah, there was one time I was doing this charity event, and it was like a songwriter circle, and on it was a songwriter who, he's a New York-based songwriter who I have had admired for a really long time but hadn't met. And, you know, so I was doing the sound check, and he hadn't come in yet, and another guy, it was like a four-act bill or whatever, we were all going to be on stage at the same time, he had saw me play, and he goes, at the time, I guess, you said you were only 17? And I said, yeah, and he goes, oh, James was about to come in. He goes, James is going to hate you, you know, because he was. So I took that. I loved that. That was really high praise. And so now because I looked up to him for so long. So now, you know, it was great to have played with him. And now we're just friends. But, you know, I just thought that was funny. So if I can make people hate me because of that, I'll take it. You know,
that is such a special moment, and makes me think of a song. Maybe it's American Dream. It's a Olivia Rodrigo one, but part of it is she talks about, when am I going to stop being good for my age and just start being good? That mm-hmm. was one of the lyrics. And I really liked that, because I do think someone like yourself, and you've mentioned this sprinkled a couple times, is when you are young and good, it's like, oh, you're so good for your age. And it can be a little bit tricky as you transition to, oh, I don't have the youth thing on my side anymore. I've just got to be good. And I don't know, any comments or thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that was something that really kept me working. And I think too, it's an interesting when things start to shift. And, you know, I started so young. So when I was that age, I was sort of like, at least it felt like I was like way ahead of, you know, anyone else that was playing, because if they were picking it up when they were 12, I had been playing for 3 years already. So not that I was better, because it all matters on what you're focusing on. Like I was like, I don't consider myself to be like some like face melting guitar player. And there are plenty of 10-year-olds that are way better than me because that's what they do. But like, just in terms of what I wanted to do, I felt like I was ahead because I had done more gigs or whatever. And that was then. And now, like, you know, for my age, it's like, I think I am vaguely Olivia Rodrigo's age. You know what I mean? It's like that has sort of shifted. And now the people my age, some of them are, you know, doing that, you know? So it is interesting how that shift sort of, you know, happened.
Yeah, but it's always going to be, if you wanted to, you could literally compare forever and ever. I could be like, oh, Emma Chamberlain is hosting Vogue at the red carpet, right? Like, you could do that, but then part of what I'm hoping to do with this podcast is look at those people and you celebrate it and you're like, yeah, you're right, they are my age. I wonder what they're doing and how would that propel me? Like, you stop looking at it and be like, oh man, I wish, and you start being like, I want to know oh, yeah, what they're absolutely. Doing. And it sounds like you do that with all the work and musicians you work with. It's like, cool, you've achieved this. Can I get some of that wisdom? Like, you get absolutely. Hungry for it. And actually, I'd love if you could tell the story about I think it was, what was it, Tom Petty, 2016, there was some sort of Christmas situation.
Yes.
If that rings a bell, could you just tell us that story?
Yeah, absolutely. I had been a big Petty fan for a while, and I had been playing guitar at that point for probably 3 years or something like that. And so I had gotten a little bit into the, you know, the Petty fan, you know, groups and whatever. So I got a letter in the mail, and it was in Tom Petty wrapping paper, and it said, "To Jake from Santa, don't open until Christmas." This was the day before Christmas Eve, so I guess the 23rd. So I, being 12, I opened it immediately, obviously. And it was two Fiddler tickets to their show when they were coming in Jersey that spring, and a signed record and a letter from Tom and his manager saying, you know, "We want to make sure you see the tour." So that was so incredibly nice of him and the team. So that thrilled me. I was super excited. And in the meantime, I had done some charity work for this animal rescue charity out based in LA called the Tazzy Fund. Rock the Dogs is the fundraisers that they did. And it was, you know, stray animals, and they would just take them and they would give them medical care if they needed and get them homes or whatever. And the president of the board of that charity is a guy named Mike Campbell, who is Tom's lead guitarist in the Heartbreakers. So he knew me through that. So I guess when they got in town, they had sort of heard that, oh, there's like a 13-year-old. I had turned 13. So I was an old man, and they said a 13-year-old is coming. So I guess he connected it and invited me back, which was incredible of him. So I didn't get to meet Tom, but I met all the other Heartbreakers, and it was just, they were the sweetest and they were so supportive. And I'm really grateful for those relationships. I still talk to most of them, you know, today. And they just have seemingly infinite wisdom, stories, advice, problems, you know, and any sort of thing I can learn from. And they've been really, really kind to express that, you know, as well.
Thank you for telling it. It's cool because I had read it, but hearing you add those inflections and the emotion to it, because it's just so cool. And that is why with your lyrics, and I really do encourage the listeners to go listen to your music and follow and do all that great stuff. But your wisdom, I know we just spoke about being good for your age and then just being good, but you are very wise beyond things that I necessarily understand yet. And so that's what's just really cool. And you can, like, how do I say this? There's sometimes you look or you hear a piece of art, which music is, and you just are like, wow, there's layers to that. And part of your layers is this wisdom that has almost, like, through osmosis been given to you from musicians who are 86 years old, and you spend the Sundays with them. So you can really hear that in your music, and I'm thankful for it as a fan. So just, I hope that as you grow, more of those experiences happen, which will just be so powerful, and you don't know what you don't know yet, which is the exciting part of that.
Thank you for saying that too. That's really kind. I love writing, so I'm always grateful that, you know, people have listened to it. It's a hard thing for me, at least, to tap into, but it's definitely crucial to get those, you know, sort of things that resonate in those songs.
Is there anything I haven't asked you during this interview that you feel like I should have, or maybe is something you've wanted to say that has come up through the process? It's like a bit of an open mic for you now, if there's anything I didn't ask that you think I should have.
I appreciate it. Well, first of all, you did a great job. I don't think there's anything you particularly missed. I will joke and say in literally every interview I have gave in the last probably 6 years, somebody asked, how do you balance? You mentioned juggling before, you know. So I will answer that in case people listening are wondering, even though I have answered it every other time. So I always laugh when that question comes through. So thank you for not asking. Yes, but the answer is so simple. It's just, I really like both of those, both learning, like academics and the music. So it's never like a train wreck when I need to put down the guitar and switch. Yesterday I wrote a 30-page paper, so that was not as fun to not write songs and do that instead, but you have to sometimes.
You do, and thank you for asking and then answering that question. And it makes me think about, like, identity is something that we haven't discussed too much, but I've discussed previously a lot with athletes. Is like, if you are the rower, like when I came to Rutgers, I was the New Zealand rower. And I'm like, well, I'm actually a lot more than that. But once you've moved countries, you're 100% that. So a lot of people know you as Jake Thistle, the musician. But I think what's really valuable and makes you a better musician is the fact that you are studying, because you weren't able to write songs yesterday because you had to write this 30-page paper. So then once you're done with that, you're itching to get back to writing. Like, it creates this push and pull of where your energy and time can go. And also it means that, like, hey, if songwriting isn't going well, your whole identity is not attached to it. So if, like, if you're 100% identifying with it and then it doesn't work, then 100% of you is feeling frustrated and sad. Whereas if songwriting is not going great, you're like, you know what? I'm going to put that to the side and I'm going to tap into my other half, which is student, or my other part, which is family. Like, you're able to seek out joy from a different part when maybe something's not going so well. Yeah, so I just think from a practical point of view, it makes you a better performer in your niche if you have a diverse identity.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I've noticed just throughout my life, I am by far least productive when I have the most time. I just can't get anything done. I don't know why. If I have a week of no gigs in the summer and it's just, all right, great. Theoretically, I could come out of this week with 7 to 9 songs. Always, 100% of the time, I come out with 0 songs. So being able to, and I guess it is that time crunch, if you're right, like the sort of the vacuum of having to write a midterm means that I'm thinking the whole time how I would rather be writing songs, which means I actually will maybe today. Right? Oh, but today I have to do Mark Beale's people. You know, in general, do songs. So I just try to keep busy, you know, however I can. And so that is through mostly, the stuff here at Rutgers. And so that has helped me a lot, is to just really shrink my time. So for some reason, I can do more. If I could find a way to figure out how to switch that, I'd be in really good shape, but not yet.
No, have you heard of the phrase, if you want something done, give it to a busy person?
Yes, yeah.
That's it. It's like they'll figure it out. I love that. My last question, and I didn't even think about how hard this would be for you, so major caveat on it before I ask, is I always, my sign off is, if you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who would it be? So,
oh wow, okay.
Think about that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I will go just on the basis of longevity. I'll say Tom Petty, because we're coming up on, I'm 20 now, so I guess 17 years of that being like such a constant in my life. I would miss it if it weren't there. So I think there are certainly times where that he, you know, that's not the first answer if I go through phases or whatever. But just for the future, I have to say him, just because there's a lot of diversity there. It's a long career. It's like basically 50 years worth of music. And so I'll go with him, but I don't know. I've been listening this year in particular to Wilco a lot, the 1975 a lot, the Japanese House, Bleachers, all of them. But I don't want to say them, because then if I start next year listening to somebody else, maybe they wouldn't. So that's a much more long, rambling and convoluted answer than you need.
No, thank you. And I enjoy that. It was actually fairly succinct. And with Tom Petty too, like, he's, I'm not going to say like a muse, but he's that cat, like that moment, that catalyst.
He was the catalyst, exactly.
And so that's so special. You're always going to be like, that's the thing that lit the fire. And other artists and musicians and inputs are going to like grow the fire into like a raging bonfire. But he was the one who first lit the match. So it's really cool.
Yeah, he's particularly exciting because, like, at this point, especially because, you know, he's obviously not releasing music anymore. I've heard the stuff he's put out. So, like, I don't get in as many obsessions with him and the band anymore, because I've heard the songs. I've put in my obsession time. So there are times where I'm listening to him nonstop for sure. But it's that sort of like the magic of, you know, listening to a new artist or going to a new concert of somebody you haven't seen before. And it creates, I don't know, I'm very obsessive when it comes to that stuff. And I will listen to the same song on loop for hours, or the same artist on a loop for months or something like that. So that's not really happening with him anymore, because I did that, you know, and there's not really new music to feed that. So he is more than anyone else, like just an incredible sort of like always on in the background. Like that tab is always running, you know, in my brain, more so than any other artist, because it's like you listen for a month and then you get burnt out and then maybe you come back on the next record or something. So he just, it's just like a different beast with him because of how I grew up listening, you know.
Thank you for being on Tall Poppy Talk. Like I said, and I can't emphasize it enough, for me, this is such a fun time capsule where I've got you November 2024. I, with full confidence, know that you're just going to exponentially soar. And so it's a real gift that I've got over an hour of your time to share your story and hopefully inspire listeners. So thank you.
Of course. It means the world to have me. This was such a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest, and we'll see you all next time. Take care, be kind.